Okay, call to order the House Committee on Education for Monday, May 22nd, 2017. We're going to have a couple of changes that I'll, in case people don't want to hang around for the whole thing. We will be carrying over Senate Bill 1002, and then also...
Just the work sessions.
Just the work sessions, and then also Senate Bill 208. And we'll be carrying over those work sessions until March, or May 31st. Want to let you guys know.
208 and 1002,
we're going to carry over the work sessions. Okay, with that, I open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1002. Representatives or senators, and if you want to give us a little summary of it.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1002 directs the school board to adopt policies related to the use of school facilities by private tutors. It requires the policies allow the use of school facilities by public school students and private tutors and allows limiting school facilities to before and after school hours. There is a fiscal statement on this bill and a revenue impact statement has been issued as no revenue. There is an A6 amendment which changes the scope of the bill to only affect private tutors for dyslexia and allows the school district to recover all or a portion of its cost from private tutors for dyslexia. And it makes the school district board or school personnel liable for civilly or criminally for any interaction between a private tutor for dyslexia and any public school student with whom the tutor has contact at school facilities. A fiscal impact statement has not been issued at this time, and the revenue impact is no impact.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For your record, my name is Sarah Gelser. I'm the state senator from Corvallis and Albany. This bill, I did not expect to introduce this session. Sometime last summer, I was contacted by a parent that was not in my district that had for quite some time had their child, elementary school age student, being tutored after school on school grounds because that's where the child was in their after school program, and she needed tutoring after school in order to keep up. She had dyslexia. And the school then changed its policy and was going to charge $100 an hour for every hour that the tutor was there. So the family did what a family should do. I think they went to their school board and said, this is a problem. We need access. And the result of that was that the school board then changed the policy and said, no tutors can be at school if they are paid. So a volunteer tutor could come, but a paid tutor could not come. So they contacted me, and I thought, surely this can be worked out. So I contacted the school district and understood that there were concerns about liability and, you know, was there some sort of a misunderstanding? Because I agree, we should not be asking schools to spend time or money to open up facilities that are not otherwise open. But if the school library is open, if the grounds are open and it's not being open for that particular purpose and the person has a background check and the student is there anyway, we want our kids to succeed and have access to the tutoring that they need. So I had asked things like, could you have a registry of where, you know, tutors come and, you know, you have a panel of approved tutors and there's a fee that that tutor pays at the beginning of the year. The district said no and suggested that there was a state statute that precluded anybody that would make a profit from using public grounds and suggested that it might include school libraries. So that's where the bill came from. Public libraries came forward on the Senate side and said they're already allowing people to be tutored, not in big groups, but kind of this one-on-one tutoring. So we took the libraries out, and this is what we still have. I think it's really important that kids have access to the support and care that they need. I appreciate the amendments. My hope is that if districts and the amendments would narrow it just to students with dyslexia. I think there are a lot of kids that may need tutoring that might have a different disability than dyslexia. So if the amendments are passed, my hope would be most school districts would still allow this to happen and wouldn't say, well, Sue, you have dyslexia, so you can be tutored on campus, but Bobby, you have dysgraphia, so you cannot. I actually think that will happen. I think the vast majority of school districts are willing to provide their students with the support that they need, so I'm happy to support the amendments. I just hope that we are able to do something so that kids can get the tutoring they need. The impact for this particular child is she now can't get tutored until 8:30 at nighttime, which is after dinner and getting home, because a third grader or fourth grader, they can't drive themselves someplace in town to get to wherever the tutor is. Where they're at is at school in their after-school program. It makes sense to me that their tutor should be able to come to them if it causes no new cost to the district.
Can
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. Senator Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5. I was not expecting this kind of bill to come to my Senate committee because I was not expecting Senator Gelser to bring it. but it showed up. And after we started having conversations with people, it became evident to me, having been a high school principal, that when you have parents and others willing to do whatever it is to get their kids to be capable of handling the schoolwork, and i.e. they need tutors, every school should be helping those families make that happen. I can't imagine why you would not want that to happen in your school, especially if you aren't going to have to spend any money or any time doing it, and that they were actually doing your job, which is to help every student get the maximum they can out of the school and be able to be successful. You know, we had a high school where we kept doors open in buildings because kids needed to use computers and they didn't have any at home, and we didn't get a single in the regular school day, the kids would play around with the mouses and take the mouse balls out and play around. In the room that we left open and the custodians went by from time to time to make us go, never was anything taken out. The kids respected that particular place and came in to do the work because they didn't have those facilities at their homes. And I came to believe that having adults around the building who are caring adults that want to make things better helps everybody in the building, even if it's after school, because they'll say something to somebody that walks by and say, you know, that's not what we do at the school. So I've never understood why people don't want to make the school a community and bring people in. So it frustrates me when people put roadblocks in the ways of helping kids get what they need in a public school that's there, provided by those people's taxes and everything else. I've never quite understood that. So when this bill came and we got this resistance, I started thinking, this is crazy. And our committee very quickly came to the point of view, which surprised, I think, all of us, that this really needed to happen. They shouldn't be putting roadblocks in front of families that are trying to do the right thing for their kids and work into their schedule, because we have very complex schedules these days. So I don't know you need the amendment, because I understand that there are other kids that may need tutoring or not. I wouldn't put anything just for dyslexia. I'm dyslexic. I really appreciate that. But from my perspective, if the school doesn't want to do it, close the doors and lock it up for everybody, if that's what you think is the right thing to do. Because you have that option. It says in this bill, if they're not open and it isn't there, you can't use it. I've always been of the belief, if I have staff that are there, like librarians and others, and they care about giving kids the opportunity, I want to keep it as open as long as I possibly can so those kids can use those facilities as much as they can. So I encourage you to pass this bill. If you decide that you want to do the amendments or whatever, that's fine. I think that what Sarah did at the end of the last deal with making sure that these people have background checks and we follow all the kinds of regulations we would do for other volunteers that come to our schools was the right thing to do, and it does help take care of that, those other issues that we have with respect to liability and so on. So I encourage you to have thoughtful consideration about this bill and hope that you move it and allow kids to get the help they need so they can be successful.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ann Leininger. I represent House District 38, Lake Oswego in Southwest Portland, and this bill does encompass one of the school districts that I represent, or the issue has arisen in a district that I represent, and I'm proud to be here today in support of the bill and the Dash A6 amendment. As I understand the issue from my constituents, one of the things that really resonates with me is this is two working parent family, and they have transportation issues during the day. And I think a number of you folks, a number of us in the legislature, have tried to manage through being a two working parent family, and it's really hard to get your kids access to some of the resources and services and activities that they need. So I don't know exactly what went into the concerns about enabling the family to continue the tutoring, but I think that the compromise and the work-throughs that are set forth in this Dash A6 amendment seem very reasonable and hopefully allow the very good-hearted set of school administrators in the district where this is happening to test drive allowing this to continue in a way that will show that it works and that it's not unduly burdensome and that it doesn't cause them to lose a lot of resource or expose themselves to a lot of liability. I like that in the Dash A6 there's the $100 fee maybe helps offset costs that they perceive exist, the for dyslexia narrows it so that, you know, they have a chance to solve this specific constituent problem, but do kind of a pilot to make sure that it's really to hopefully determine that it's not that burdensome to allow this on-site use. And the deletion of liability exposure, I think, helps them also feel comfort that they're not exposing themselves to additional risk. So I would encourage you, as you know, the person who's trying hard to be a good representative for both my school district and my constituents, I think here it really I come out in favor of let's do this. I think the A6 is a good compromise. I hope that you will see fit to consider working the bill next time, provided you have the paperwork. And thank you for your consideration. And thank you to these good people for all your groundwork.
Okay, are there any questions? Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So I'm not a lawyer, but I have a hard time thinking that the A6 squares with ADA and other issues around disabilities. So what happens when you have a parent who's got a child with dyslexia and then has another child who's being tutored by the same tutor who's got a different disability? I had two kids who had very different issues, one with a visual acuity problem, one with sensory disorders. They both went to the same set of therapists to get work, and so we brought that individual in and they had two different issues. How can you serve one child, in, even in the same family, and not serve another? I struggle to think that that's legal under federal law, but there might be other people who are smarter than me on that issue. I've got real concerns about the A6.
Okay. Do you want me to respond? Or do you?
We can both respond. That works.
Yeah.
I won't respond to the amendment. But.
You know, so I'll respond to say that I'm coming sort of late in the day to this issue and this amendment, and I would love to see us find a way to accommodate this family's need. And I haven't done a legal sufficiency assessment, though I know that when amendments are drafted, generally speaking, legislative counsel provides a letter if they think that it implicates a violation of law. So I'm unaware if there is that kind of a letter, but if there were, hopefully it has gone to the committee administrator. If there is no flagged legal insufficiency, and again, I don't represent that I have done that assessment, then I'd love to see us find a path forward to help solve this problem. So, Senator Gelson.
So, and again, I wanted to clarify the -6 amendment. My preference would be not to include that dyslexia narrowing. Everything else in the bill makes sense pretty much for the reasons that you had raised. And one of the reasons that the issue surprised me in the first place was along that line, because most districts allow programs to take place after school when things are open, maybe for a fee, a Girl Scout troop or a Boy Scout troop or a craft club, and it struck me as unusual where a person might be paying music lessons sometimes happen on a campus, and it just struck me as funny that a specific academic thing that was related to a disability might be excluded. So that certainly could be another path that people could move forward. For me, the expediency is I do want the issue addressed. It's hard for me to imagine on a practical level that if the law says you must do it for dyslexia, that in practicality, a school board is actually going to adopt a policy that says, you know, Lena can come in and because she's dyslexic and have the tutoring, and Brianna can't because she has Down syndrome. I don't think that's the way it would actually work in the end, because if the school's open, it's open. But I would rather have that amendment than not have the bill at all.
So, yeah. So that's the choice.
Yes.
So I've, you know, worked under a school system where the comment in meetings was, we'll do the minimum of what the law requires us to do. And I actually think that is not was not a one comment years ago when I heard it from a school administrator. So I do have worries that, well, if this is the minimum of what the law requires us to do, it's what we're going to do, and we're not going to do anything else. I actually feel very uncomfortable supporting the -6, even though I love the underlying bill and want to give families that flexibility and support. And I share that school district, one school in the Lake Oswego district, with Representative Leininger. But I do have a serious problem with the carve-out piece and saying, this is the disability we're prioritizing when children who are deaf, blind, any other disability that we deal with in our school system, you don't get same access. I think, and I have sent a note to LC to ask for that, because we don't always get that unless we actually ask, you know, for some clarity. And so I have asked for a note to see the ADA issue.
We'll just go around this way. Representative Springer, then Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just restate some of the concerns I have with the amendment. If the amendment would have been in place when I wrote checks for our son to be tutored in the school, he wouldn't have been allowed to. He wouldn't have been allowed to. But let me be clear, he was allowed to because the school said sure. And so lots of concerns in this bill, and I guess just maybe to lay out a couple of them. First of all, I'm in support of the idea. Second of all, when I've heard the liability issue come up a couple times, and then a school district went from $50 to $100 because of liability, I don't see how that addresses the liability issue.
And that does not include liability. That's something separate.
Right. But I have heard that brought together, not from these
separate
three people.
Taxes.
And I don't see how that speaks to the liability. I would rather not have the amendment. I realize there's some criteria there for that. But schools need, when they have their doors open, to have the access. To have the access, especially when the check we wrote, the person we wrote the check to was a special ed teacher, the best in the district. That's why I said we need more and extra all summer long. And so we wrote a check to a district employee to continue through the summer, and it was at the district office, and the district was great about facilitating that. I cannot imagine why a district would not facilitate this.
Okay, Representative McLean?
I'm not saying that I read everything on every bill, but evidently I've missed something about this amendment because I don't understand why we have to have this only be on dyslexia. So if somebody wants to catch me up on that, on why this is a rule, or why we need to add this amendment to make this basic bill, which I wish we didn't need, because it would seem that we should have schools that say community places, community kids, community taxes, let's get them through the door if we can help them do what they need to do for this child. So I would rather not have this bill at all. If there's a need, let's have the bill. But what about this amendment? I don't get it. What am I missing? Why do we have it?
Would you like me to address that? Because the amendments...
We didn't propose.
Okay, the amendments are all mine, and the reason is when this bill came to us, it was very open-ended, and it actually left it up that you could have a basketball tutor in, you could have somebody tutoring somebody in music, and so on and so forth. We found out that very few districts actually deny this, and it was just the only ones that we could find out was basically two districts. There was also the issue of liability. There was the issue of usage. But probably the biggest issue whatsoever, or the biggest issue of this, was dictating to a school board how they are to go through and have a facilities use procedure. And so that was probably the biggest issue, was to dictating to the school boards about facility use in their facilities. And so that was probably one of the biggest issues with this. And my inclination was just not to hear the bill at all. And so it was one of these things that it doesn't preclude a school district from going through and offering, you know, their hallway or whatever for any sort of tutoring that they have. But it also does not require a district to go through and make special arrangements and to worry about liability and to worry about background checks and to worry about somebody who is not a district employee in their building with other children around. And so that was the number one issue reason for the amendments that we put in.
Okay, well, thank you for that.
And we can do this during the discussion part, but if we have any other questions for the panel. So did you follow? Oh, I saw this. Okay, Representative Sullivan.
Okay, thank you. I have some comments mixed in with some questions. This was a concerning one for me, and I read a lot on this one, did some research. This seems like it is trying to do, it's addressing something that's a very unfortunate circumstance between a school district and the parents, the family. And ultimately, when I read it, I was super concerned about a lack of local control. People elect their school board members, you know, five to seven school board members to ultimately look over these type of policies and address these policies at a local level. And it is just—it's concerning that the school district. I don't know what the process. I didn't read into that part of it to see how in depth they went with their reasoning. It's frustrating because it said $100 a year. So basically, the school district has a facilities process now, and so in this bill, we now have a fee that says you can't charge more than $100 a year. That doesn't mean that it can't be every day that this might happen. You didn't really say once a week for 1 hour, $100 a year. It could be multiple times a week. And I'm very concerned because that right there, I totally agree with these are public buildings, opening it up, making sure that we have access and such. But $100 a year could be an incredible bargain for a for-profit, tutor. I did question about the school district liability on the oversight because I know that that was written up in the amendment, but I am concerned about overall the district is, ultimately responsible if they're in the property of a school. So I have some concern on that one. If you have any insight to that for me, and then you want to just address one by one because I have others. Sorry.
Is that okay if I answer?
I don't know.
Yeah, Chair Doherty, Representative Solomon, thank you for the questions. I think first on the comment, that was my initial gut response when I first got the phone call, which is why I went back to have you talk to your school district. I served on a school board for 5 years, and one of the most difficult things that we wrestled with was our school use kind of facility policies. What are appropriate fees? I know in our district we ended up tiering them, so academic use, social use.
Great.
Other kinds of uses. And one of the other things that we struggled with was equity when we did that. Mm-hmm. And I assumed that this could be just addressed by, surely there's a way to address this in a facilities policy. I was surprised to go through that the family had gone through the process. The response that they got from their board was something that frankly, as a former school board member, was embarrassing to mm-hmm. me to have a constituent come and say, please help us with this problem, and the response be, okay, we're going to shut it down for everybody altogether, especially when it was learning. The other concern was when I talked to the district said, we would need you to change the law for us to be able to do this because there's a law that says that you can't have a paid person on district property. So basically the district said there has to be a statutory change, which didn't make a lot of sense to me because so many school districts do allow it. In terms of the liability issue, that issue, I believe, is already addressed. I mean, as Representative Springer mentioned, this happens in probably the vast majority of our districts on a regular basis. And if it's not for tutoring, it's for piano lessons and Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts and 4-H and all of these other organizations that are in schools, and we don't have control over who those adults are. In terms of the fee, the thing that's really important that I think has been lost in a number of conversations, not in this room, but kind of outside this room in the bill, is that it's very clear that the student cannot have access to tutoring unless the school is already open and it's going to be in a space that was already there and it's not requiring any extra light to be turned on, any extra door to be unlocked, or any additional custodial staff or any other staff in the school. So that fee is really to recover the costs. If the school is closed, they cannot request that the school be opened in order to do it. If the library is closed and there's a policy that says you can't use hallways, you're not able to do that. So that's why I think the fee, it makes sense to me that the fee be adequate and that a person that has a business pays a fee to be able to do that. But because it's constructed to say you don't have to open when you're not already open, the whole intent is not to create additional cost.
Okay. But when you set the fee, that's what really concerns me. You've set the fee for the $100 for the year, but there is no time constraint. So you could say, well, I'm going to come in and every day, Monday through Friday, the library is going to be open, so I should be able to utilize that every single day. What happens when we have other facilities requests? So is there now, because there is that this is in statute, I mean, how does that work for other facilities requests
So, Chair Doherty, Representative Solomon, this isn't a request that's made by the tutor. This is a request that's made by the child. The issue is the child,
right,
who attends the school,
right,
has a
so
tutor.
The parents.
So it's not coming from an entity or a business that's requesting to use the school in order to run a business. It is the, and if a child needs to be tutored 5 days a week and has a parent that's able to do that, I think it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing about the fee that was really concerning to me about kind of the initial thing, which was the $100 an hour when they were there, is already it's so far out of reach for low-income kids and kids of color and kids that need these things. And in some school districts, your school boards are not necessarily made up of individuals who had a lot of experience in kind of that area of really struggling to be able to afford these things or even having a child in special education.
And this fee doesn't mean that it's the only fee you can charge for anybody. You're going to have basketball camps, i.e., tutors for basketball players, at your schools, mm-hmm. and they're going to get charged a facility fee. That's what we do. We've done that forever. Those coaches come in. We don't check all of those coaches with the way we're going to check this tutor, because this is a request from a child mm-hmm. and their family to use the facilities. They're bringing in their person. We are going to make them get a background check, however, because mm-hmm. of the way the bill was written. So it doesn't change the fact that they can still have this fee schedule for all these other kinds of activities that people are going to want. This one doesn't say it's the only fee you get. It's mm-hmm. saying if your child and family want to have a tutor meet them at the school, that's what it's about.
Okay, quickly, we have lots to do today.
Okay, yeah, and I guess it's the, why do we even have the set fee in there then? Why don't we just say if this is part, that it is the... I was also, Representative Leininger had mentioned kind of like a pilot program, so does this have a sunset on it that allows to say, all right, then it would...
Chair Doherty, Representative Solomon. So again, none of us are the originators of this amendment that you're asking me about.
Okay.
But I think the idea was to skinny down the request as narrowly as possible, to intrude upon the sovereignty of the school board members as narrowly as possible, and still accomplish the goal, which is to help this child have access to the tutoring that is desired. So my comment was more along the lines of, maybe it will turn out that it's not, doesn't feel that burdensome to the school, and so they will subsequently conclude that they're comfortable with a broader array of things. I think, again, this is a floor, not a ceiling, both in terms of the number of kids and the kinds of kids who can be served, and also a floor, not a ceiling, in terms of the parameters that a school board can put on the use of their facilities. You know, I think I heard you perhaps make a comment that made me think you were wondering if, wow, can a tutor now just set up shop 9 to 5 in the school for $100 a year? I don't read this language as suggesting that the school district or the school board relinquishes all other ability to make policies in reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions, as you will, on how people may use the facilities. It's just, you know, you may conclude this is not something that you can support, but the goal is to make a real incisive effort that's narrowly focused to try to meet this one family's need while intruding as little as possible on the sovereignty of the school board. And again, we didn't request this amendment, but it seems like it might be a path forward.
And if I could add, I want to be clear in introducing the bill. The goal wasn't to pass a law for a single kid. I mean, I think there's probably other kids that experience that, and to make it clear, we aren't the originators of the amendment, but I've also learned in this process there are a lot of competing interests and concerns, and a half a loaf is a whole lot better than no loaf at all. So if I was given the choice of, you know, certainly my first choice would be not to limit to dyslexia, but I far prefer limiting it in the statute to dyslexia than not opening the doors at all, because we've got a lot of kids with dyslexia in the state that do need access to tutors and that do need help, and I don't want that amendment or discomfort with the amendment to be in the way of getting there. I think it will open the doors more broadly, and I also think it's a good opportunity to revisit the idea of whether or not we are providing adequate instruction during the school day to students that are experiencing dyslexia, so that their parents aren't having to hire tutors after school. We have to have this conversation.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions this panel? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have Lori and Morgan. Mm-hmm. Lori Satinfield and Morgan Allen. And we may have to stop you to close this to have somebody else come in and speak on another issue, and then we'll reopen this. So.
Go ahead. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Lori Satin, spoke for the Oregon School Boards Association. Here in with some concerns about 102, and I appreciate the comments from you, Chair Doherty, and you, Rep. Solman, and the entire conversation that we've had about this bill, the amendments. Districts are required to have district use policies, and I think what's getting a little bit of concern is a policy that is it's a policy that says no private tutoring for which a teacher receives a fee will be allowed in a school building. I think that's also at the local discretion, but we've got districts who have passed this, and I believe that's a piece of this that's happening in the discussion. I think if this bill moves forward, narrowing it to the dash six would be helpful, because I think, as you've mentioned, tutoring for sports and other things could be a problem for district use facilities in general as it continues to broaden. The liability piece, what we were worried about was the access that a tutor in the building would have interactions with other students and other personnel, and we want to be sure that the district does not have any additional liability with that. So that's the piece that has been added in the dash six.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Morgan Allen here on behalf of COSA, and I'm going to echo some comments I made in the Senate. I think the conversation today has been good, and I think there's very good points to be made on both sides, and certainly our hope is that we can come to a good compromise before the session is over. But I think generally from our organization's perspective, the concern is we have local facilities, and the locally elected school boards and the administration are charged with making the decisions on how to use those facilities and who has access to them and other policies at the local level. And if a community member or a parent or a tutoring organization or sports or whomever within that community does not agree with the decision that the local administration or the local school board has made, they have recourse. They can certainly go to the school board and ask for a change in policy, and my understanding is basically that's what happened in this situation. So we have one circumstance in one school district that we're aware of. The parents and other folks went to their school board, and their school board essentially changed the policy or made a stronger policy or reaffirmed the policy, however you want to describe it, that the administrators had made. And so, again, I hate to make this argument. I made it in the Senate. I have only made it once this session. I'll make it only on this bill. I think our concern is, again, this is one of those slippery slope type of things, is we have charged our school districts, our locally elected boards, and our administrators to take care of our kids in our buildings. And certainly there are appropriate times, we would agree, when decisions that are made are poor, certainly when things are discriminatory or people are not treated equally or other things that are against the law or against the rules. But in this instance, the local board violated no law or rule that we're aware of, and followed the policy, heard from their constituents, and disagreed with their constituents. And so we're a little bit troubled by, you know, continuing to set precedent when things happen at the local level, people disagree with that, and they seek recourse from the legislature. Certainly that's appropriate, again, when there's laws, clearly there's been discrimination or something bad has happened. But from our perspective, you know, we're opening up the continued discussion about overriding the decisions of locally elected school boards and our administrators that are charged with running the school districts.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Lyle.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. Can you help us understand what happened here, just so we get a sense of how egregious this is? And this comes from a place for me that I'm having difficulty imagining why this is even a problem. We know that school districts are required to have a plan for the public to use their facilities, et cetera. What was the big problem here that triggered all this?
We do have the people that brought it to us coming up next.
Okay. All right. If we've got the folks
know,
that...
Yeah. Maybe the next panel will be able to answer
thanks.
That question.
Yep. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to both of you for your testimony. I've heard as far as, I think it's the A6 amendment that talks about dyslexia, which I really am offended that we're just carving out one thing. Maybe I'm offended because it would have kicked my kid to the curb because he doesn't have dyslexia. What
about language that talks about for academic purposes, if we're still worried about music or whatever. Yes. What about a kid that's been identified with special ed needs, he's on an IEP, he or she's on an IEP, something like that, to really drill that down to where it is academic. So I offer that up for some consideration. Did you?
Chair Dorey, Representative Sprenger, the policies that are already in place that districts are required to have is a local control. They have the discretion. And as Mr. Allen testified to this particular situation, the board said no, and basically was because it was a tutor that was being paid, so they were considering it an enterprise going on in a public setting, and that's what we found out from the district side.
Thank you.
Follow up?
Yes, quickly, please. We're going to have to close this by 10 minutes till. So I've heard the liability issue with people in the building. I can think of times when the building was open, after school hours. Kids had left for the most part, except there's always kids in a school building, and that's a wonderful thing. PTC meetings, and nobody's doing background checks there, and you have your meeting in the teacher's lounge sometimes, or the library, whatever. So we still have people milling around a building. And so I don't know that this is the only or even the most problematic liability area.
Chair Doherty and Representative Springer, I would agree. I think my understanding of the law is that people who have unsupervised access of students are required to get the LEDS state police criminal background check. So in some of the instances you described, certainly. So I think that I believe that's addressed in the bill and the amendment is the background check. So I don't think, I hope that's not a liability issue. And I think that's a very technical thing that we could work through without a problem.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, next we have Amy Angel and Patrick Angel. And I may have to cut you off and close the hearing and then reopen the hearing. We have another legislator coming in at 3:45. So didn't realize it would go so long. So
thank you very much.
No, that's okay. We want to give you your time.
Thank you, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. My name is Amy Angel. It's my husband, Patrick Angel. I guess we are the culprits responsible for causing all of this commotion, although we might say it was the school board, not us. I had some prepared remarks, but I also feel like having heard some of the questions that I might want to just dive into some of those issues. Our daughter, when she was in third grade in the Lake Oswego School District, she's dyslexic. She was able to meet with her tutor twice a week. She was in the extended care program. The tutor would come in, pull her out, meet with her in the library while the homework club was going on around her, and everything worked fine. We had asked the principal, is this okay? He said, if the extended care staff is okay, we're okay with it. We asked the extended care staff. They said, the principal's okay, we're fine. All worked great, no problems, no issues. Our tutor also tutored one or two other students in a similar capacity in the school library who were in the extended care program. In the beginning of fourth grade, our tutor presented to go tutor one of the other kids that she tutored, and she was told by the school secretary, you're not allowed to be here anymore. And the tutor called me. She said, I don't know what's going on. So I talked to the school secretary, said there was a school-wide principals meeting where they were instructed by the school superintendent that I guess some buildings were allowing private tutoring and others weren't. And I imagine someone who was denied access complained, and it got up to the superintendent, who said, oh, no, our policy says you have to comply with our facilities use policy, which requires a $50 an hour fee to use the library. We're already paying the tutor $65 an hour for the tutoring service itself. That paying an additional $50 an hour to use the library, to have our daughter sit at the table that she would be sitting at, whether she's in homework club or meeting with the tutor, seemed absurd. And they said, nothing we can do about it. We talked to the assistant superintendent. He said, it's a school board policy. You have to talk to them. They scheduled us for an executive session. We made our petition. We said, we're happy to comply with the background check. Our tutor's background checked already. She has an insurance policy covering her for general liability purposes. All of the other facility use requirement fees, facility requirements we can meet. We're just asking to waive the $50 an hour fee. They heard that in executive session, so we were dismissed. And the answer was they voted 3-1, no. There's no explanation given to us as to why. We called to follow up. We still weren't given an explanation. And then they subsequently decided to amend their policy so that paid private tutors who are not otherwise district employees had to use their own private business, place of private business, to tutor students, and it had to be before and after school. So we weren't allowed to. I mean, so not only could you, if you wanted to pay the $50 an hour fee, and I don't know who would, but that wasn't even an option anymore, and that they had to be at what they considered to be the, you know, their own place of business. Our tutor does have her own office. I prefer not to take my daughter there, because to do that, it has to be after I get home from work, after she's done with extended care. It's dinner time. She's hungry. She's tired. She's had a full day. She's distracted, and she gets very little out of those tutoring sessions. And so we've struggled all year to try and find a schedule that works. It doesn't really work. We're hoping to get back to a schedule where she can be earlier in the day and not so fatigued and exhausted. And so we felt that we kind of had two options left with the school board, because they had already not only denied us, but then changed the policy. So we felt, we're both lawyers, we felt that we could go and say, okay, we're going to file a lawsuit, because we do feel that it's illegal discrimination against students with learning disabilities to not allow access when there are unpaid volunteer tutors coming in to those same facilities. There are Girl Scout troops that aren't paying fees. There are local community neighborhood associations that aren't paying fees to come in after hours and have someone unlock the doors and lock the doors. And we're not against any of that. We think all of that is fabulous. But we think that specifically saying no, these paid private tutors, and we would love to find an unpaid tutor that specializes in dyslexia, but that's not going to happen either. And so we felt our options were to file a lawsuit, which as lawyers we both know are messy, time-consuming, costly, and at best would only really help us, or that we could come to you and say, maybe we can change the law to say, hey, let's allow this access, because it's not just us. In this process, we've talked to families in Ashland, as far as Pendleton, it's throughout the Portland metro area, so Beaverton, Westland, and Wilsonville, it's Ello, it's Portland Public School is patchwork, it seems to be building by building. Some people have told me, yes, we've had no problem having our tutor come in, and others say, no, we've been banned. And so we feel that this can impact hundreds of students, if not thousands of students, and quite honestly, I mean, we are frustrated that the schools aren't providing that dyslexia instruction themselves, and we appreciate the efforts of the committee as well as the legislature as a whole in passing legislation to assist students with dyslexia, but our daughter's 10 and in fourth grade getting ready to go into fifth grade, and we can't wait for that legislation, and there's a lot of other students just like her that they can't afford to wait, and the only option is to have private tutoring from someone who is a certified dyslexic specialist that understands how dyslexics learn, because it's different than the way I learn and the way I imagine you learn. And they need that explicit instruction and understanding the phonetic rules and why we spell things the way we do and why we pronounce things the way we do. Okay. I know we're running out of time. So I think that we felt that this path of coming to you to say, this isn't just us. We don't think it was just one family in one school district that's having this problem. And we really wanted to not only fix our situation, but in general to say, you know, in terms of the amendments, I feel like it should be students with learning disabilities. So it's not distinguishing based on disability, because we do feel that it is discrimination and a disparate impact on students with learning disabilities that they're precluded when they are precluded. We've also heard through this process that there are schools that permit this, and it works. And the kids learn better because they're in a good learning environment. They're, you know, lots of...
What I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have you guys continue your testimony, but I'm going to close the hearing on this one, open it up another one, and then reopen this one because we've got Representative McLean that has a meeting that he needs to go to. So
thank you.
We're going to temporarily close the hearing on Senate Bill 1002, and we are going to open up a... public hearing on Senate Bill 208. Representative McLean. And then we'll close this one and reopen it later, and we'll just keep going back and forth. So,
please.
Okay, Alethea, if you want to read what the bill is.
Ch-
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Senate Bill 208 prevents the school district from denying homeschool students or students who attend public charter schools that does not provide interscholastic activities the opportunity to participate in all interscholastic activities available in the school district within the attendance boundaries, and it requires the public charter school pay to the school district a fee of not more than 5% of the amount of the district's general purpose grant per ADMW, and it requires the public charter school submit an additional fee equivalent to not more than 5% of the district's general purpose grant per ADMW if the student also enrolls in credits. There is a fiscal impact statement issued on that version, and there is no revenue impact. There is an amendment, which is the dash 8, which establishes exceptions for school districts' eligibility requirements for homeschool students. There's no revenue or fiscal impact that have been issued on that. And with the dash 9, it does what the dash 8 does, along with sunsetting the fee established for students enrolled in the charter school. And there is a fiscal and revenue impact on that.
Okay, thank you. Representative McClain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mike McClain. I represent District 55 in the Oregon House. I come to testify in favor of Senate Bill 208. With your assistance, we were able to pass a House bill that I sponsored with Representative Esquivel, and it's in the Senate now. And Senate Bill 208 is addressing the same concern. And since we're in the House and we have Senate Bill 2008, let's pass it. And then the House bill can go away, because in the end we only need one. But the I won't reiterate my testimony previously that I did before you. I do believe that, it's disappointing that we have to have a bill to make sure that every public school student has access to play sports in our public school system. I'll leave it at that. But here we are. I looked at the dash A9, which is and it appears to be fine. Ultimately, my goal is, if the committee, under your leadership, Madam Chair, could make this happen, it's great. We just want to make sure that regardless of what school our public school children choose, that is best for them and their families in achieving the education goals of getting a high school degree. If that is a traditional public school, zip code base, so to speak, attendance, then great. If it's a charter school, then great. And even our homeschool kids, for that matter, then great. Then, in the end, kids have different needs. We just want to make sure that no environment is given a disadvantage with regards to public schools in sports programs. Now, that being said, I understand that there may have been a goal by some administrators in this state to make charter schools unattractive by prohibiting their students to play sports. That's wrong. So, in the end, the 5% fee that this committee chose last time, if that's what we have to do, then okay. If we don't have to do it, better. This Senate Bill 208 allows it up to that and gives discretion for districts to negotiate it, and I favor that. So I think 208 is actually better than the bill that we all did, because instead of setting them out, we allow school districts to work it out up to 5%. Anyway, with that, I want to acknowledge and thank Senator Roblin for this bill and for him addressing the issue as well, and I'll hand it to him.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Senator Arne Roblin in Senate District 5. So you've got two District 5s right here.
5-5-5.
Pretty amazing.
It's kind of spooky.
Yes, a little spooky as well. What from my perspective, having been a high school principal, worked in the school systems for 32 years of my life, and recognizing how important athletics and activities are. And if you go to OSAA and just ask them about the premise of why we have sports in the first place, you know, it teaches things that we don't get to do in the classroom. And it is acknowledged throughout every study that's ever been done that it is a valuable lessons that are learned for any student to be a participant in sports, internal, forensics. It doesn't matter what the issue is. It gives kids different skills which are transferable to their future lives. We all know that, and what this bill says is that should be available to any student in Oregon. We've already told it, I know it says in here, but homeschool kids, for the most part, already have that right. We were trying to negotiate with people to try to figure out what it was, and we do understand that being a participant in activities costs the district sometimes money different from what we get from the state and all the other kinds of stunning money we come. They have to figure out how to pay for this. There's bus trips that don't get reimbursed. There's other kinds of things that happen. And many of these clubs and organizations, the kids have to raise money to get to do the same thing. So we're not trying to say that anybody should not do that. I'm hopeful, personally, that putting in the allowance of 5% and then another 5% if it's an academic course, a music or a band or whatever, that because of that ability to negotiate it, schools will talk to each other. I mean, it's always been a goal of mine that all of these institutions which are trying to help kids have real conversations. And maybe they can come to the conclusion that it really doesn't cost anything. We don't need to charge it at all. Some school districts do that now. And I certainly didn't want to get in the way of stopping that. So that's why it has that range there. The bottom line is, if we really do believe that the things we offer kids in schools are important, then we need to allow it to be for everybody. And part of the fee thing is that there are districts who say, I've got my own constituency here that are the kids that come to our school. And all of a sudden we're going to be in a situation where somebody gets bumped from another kid that came from one of these other schools, and it's going to make parents angry. When you have the opportunity to say, yeah, but they're paying their share, I mean, it gives a little bit more of an argument for those administrators and others that are going to have difficult conversations, because I will tell you, there is rarely anything more life-shattering and impactful on administrators than the day they make the cuts on different teams and activities at our schools. A lot of parents who have been watching kids for many years, especially at the high school level, know their kid is the best. And it's very difficult when they find out that the coach doesn't. And it's difficult for administrators that same day. So we understand all of that in the realm of what's going on in schools. But this is a way to level the playing field and let people know that we want kids to have the opportunity to try out. We want kids to have the opportunity to meet that team. We want kids to have the opportunity to learn the skills that are embedded in those kinds of activities. And we made it sure that we tried to make it fair so that you didn't choose school districts. My charter school's over here. My district home district's over here. Which one has the best team? I'm going to that one. No, you got to go where your zip code is. The district in which you live is the one you're going to play on. So it keeps some of those things much fairer. And so that's the genesis of the bill. I hope that people understand that it comes from a real belief that all of our kids deserve a fair shot with respect to these different kinds of things, whether the charter school is the place where they have the best learning environment for them or not. Activities are another part of that whole system, and I hope you see fit to pass this bill and move it forward. And I thank all of the people who have worked hard and sponsored and talked about this bill. So thank you very much, and happy to answer any questions that any of you might have.
Any questions of these gentlemen? Representative McLean.
I'm a supporter of the basic bill. I understand -8. I do not understand the -9.
I didn't bring any amendments over here. I just sent you a bill.
Don't worry about the -9s.
Okay.
Yeah. I haven't been all excited about a lot of amendments, but these I did not bring, so I can't tell you about that.
You're supporting the basic bill 208.
For me, that's what I came over here to talk about, was the bill that I sent over from the Senate. There are some things that in the 9 might not be bad. I'm not sure about that because I didn't really look at those a lot. I just wanted to come speak to the base bill and why it's there and why I think it's important.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
I don't know about it.
Representative Schmier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm trying to get to the bill here very quickly, and I apologize if I'd missed this in your testimony. I had to step out. So there will be a fee to the family
Mm-hmm. It's actually to the school district.
Fair enough. And if there's typically a fee to participate in a sport,
they'd have to pay that.
Everybody has to do that. That's fair. So could this create a situation where there are school districts that allow schools that allow their charter school kids to play on their team?
Without a fee.
Without a fee. So
yes.
Now are we maybe sending a statement here, and now you can charge a fee for this also?
That's why we put
We're
up to...
We're creating an incentive, I'm
no,
afraid.
That's why we put an up to clause in here, because the issue is, my feeling is that most of the school districts that are already doing it are not going to charge a fee, because it's worked out for them. It hasn't been a problem. Those that haven't allowed it, I'm giving them an option to do something. That you may be right. Some may choose to charge a fee that they haven't charged one in the past. At the end of the day, the importance for me is that all kids in the state are treated similarly with respect to them. It isn't the child making the decision. It would be the charter school making the decision if they wanted to pass the money on or not. So, but I understand exactly what your concern is.
Okay.
And that's part of the way the nines, I think, have a sunset. Is that right, for the fees? I haven't looked at those as much.
And, Madam Chair, I just brought up the nine because looked like nine was issued and it's under your name, so I wasn't sure. But I'm supportive of the base bill. Prefer this bill over the bill that was amended that Representative Esquivel and I put forth, because I think Senator Roblin is correct that this probably nails it better. And so I urge passage of the base bill. But it sounds like you may consider some amendments, and I'd be happy to submit written testimony or see on the floor next to you.
And I know I've worked with – Ozzie Rose has worked really hard with OSA and others to try to help this, and if I think he may have an amendment and talk to you why the things are happening. I'd be glad to listen to those as well. I did post for a hearing and possible work session the House bill, because I was not going to take a chance that if it died here, there wasn't something I could continue to do. So it's still on my docket, but I think this bill would serve better. That's –
Okay, any other quick questions? Representative Solomon, then Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just curious if you could just
Make
tell me,
quick.
Yep, really quickly, if you could tell me why wouldn't you just go with the one that already has gone through, but it seems like the only change is that up to fee, is that correct, or is there something different?
Madam Chair and Representative Solomon, this deals with, yes, up to gives more latitude and encourages discussion and then this... also addresses homeschool.
That's
and
true.
I can't remember. I don't think the House bill did. I think it was just aimed at charter school.
There was another bill that dealt with that.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And I would tell you that they've both already gone through. Mm-hmm. One's already gone through the Senate. One's already gone through the House. They just haven't gone through both places, so that's why we're here today.
We do that.
Okay.
Okay, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. So when we heard the different version of this bill, one of the things that came up from one of the panel groups was that, I mentioned homeschoolers, we already do let them mm-hmm. play sports and have activities. I'm still wrapping my head around then why a charter school child who lives in the district in which they live, pay taxes in, or if they're a renter, their landlord is paying taxes and they're eating that out of their rent to get those taxes paid, that we are still having the conversation about taking a percentage of a child's education dollars so they can play sports when they already pay a fee. It came up from that panel at the time that, you know, if you're a homeschooler and you're, you know, say take band or whatever, you get a state school fund, and it was sort of led to believe, or at least I'd heard, the comment was that, you know, well, those kids get a state school fund dollars, but not when they're playing sports. So I'm probably going to still be a no on this, because I feel like this is a theft of children's education dollars for something that they should already be able to do. If this bill passes and we come back into, you know, we go through this school year in this fall, and we say that, you know, this kind of behavior is still out there, what's our thought to fix it?
From my perspective, if we get it out there and it starts to work and everybody starts doing it, I would hope the school districts would take the option of cutting it down. And if not, I don't have any problem with having that conversation at a future date. I am one of those people who believes you go for what the best you can get at the time, and you talk to people and negotiate, and you move forward. And I have watched those people who want the perfect instead of the what you can get lose lots and lots of times, and that only hurts kids. So from my perspective, I try to work with people to try to find what's a solution that seems to be able to work for all people, and that's why you have the bill you have in front of you.
Okay, any other quick questions? The panel. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, what I'm going to do is temporarily close Senate Bill 208, and I'm going to reopen House Bill 1002 and continue the testimony. Thank you very much, Mr. and Mrs. Angel, for accommodating us.
Thank you for accommodating us and having us back.
Okay, so when we last finished,
So I had gotten through most of my points, but there was a couple last things that I wanted to add. I do want to urge each of you to look at the written testimony that's been submitted from both on the Senate side as well as here, because I think it does show the breadth of the issue, that it's not just us and that it's throughout the state. And also that the need for why families need this access to the schools varies by family. For us, it's that we're a two-parent working family, and logistically our child's 10 and can't get anywhere, and there's no Uber for kids yet. But for other families, it's that the tutor's office is too far away. It's that the family home is too disruptive because there are younger siblings who are caring about in the family home, and that's the other option. I know that plenty of people are tutoring in Starbucks and Fred Meyer's, and honestly, I don't think that's a great educational environment, especially for dyslexic kids, where this is probably the most important instruction they get the entire day. I do want to point out that when this all came up, I looked at school district policies all over the place, in Oregon as well as around the country, and some schools, Fairfax County, Virginia, is one of the 10th largest school district in the country, and they prioritize tutoring second only to the district's own educational purposes, because they recognize how important it is to so many families for so many different reasons. And I had urged our own school district to take a look at that. I've urged Lori with the Oregon School Boards Association to take a look at that, because the model policies that the Oregon School Board Association puts out, other than dealing with teachers or other district employees in terms of what they can do and not do in terms of tutoring, all other paid private tutors just get lumped into this commercial use of school facilities. And I can promise you these tutors are not getting rich off of tutoring our kids. I feel that it is a different animal and a different creature. And so it would be great to see other model policies that actually deal with paid private tutors to help school boards look at what the options are to make it work. And I think also, why is this narrowed down to dyslexia? The network that we've been able to tap into to help support this bill is the dyslexic community. I know that there's other students that are being tutored because they struggle with reading because they're ADHD, not because they're dyslexic. There are other students who have not yet been diagnosed, so it's unclear as to what their struggles, the source is. So all of the letters and support we've been getting have been from the dyslexic community, which looks like this is a dyslexia problem, but rest assured, I guarantee that there are plenty of other families out there who are being tutored for a number of different either learning disabilities or not even learning disabilities, but just challenges that kids are facing in schools. But certainly, especially for these dyslexic kids, these paid private tutors are their lifelines. This is what's keeping them in school and closing the gap rather than widening the gap. There are so many statistics about dyslexic kids who drop out of high school, that suffer anxiety, that suffer depression, and other life-altering impacts. And so having this access is critical to success for these kids. Thank you,
Madam Chair and Committee. She, my wife, didn't leave me a lot to say. Actually, I think she. Every time I thought I was going to cover something, I heard her cover it. But
you can cover it again.
Okay. I wanted to, insofar as Representative Vile, you asked what triggered the event. I don't know if your question was answered.
I think so, yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
It was, I want to emphasize just a couple of things. One is that it sounds like there's been a notion that this is just one family's problem. One family came to Salem and is asking the legislature and this committee to help us with our problem, and I don't think that's the case at all. And I hope that there's some discussion about the broader impact of this prohibition to tutor access. It's not just us, because we've spoke to a lot of folks. Like Amy said, there's a network of of parents and other supporters who've been impacted by and would be impacted by a policy like this. I think Senator Roblin said it really well when he said it's a roadblock. They've constructed an unnecessary roadblock that prevents our daughter and other children from learning how to read. One of the things a witness said earlier had to do with the school board's autonomy and a hands-off approach, and I understand that impulse, but the suggestion that this is not that big a deal, this is just a family who can't have access to the library after school hours. It's a big deal. I think it's a big deal, and I want to explain why that is. Dyslexia has an extremely dark side, as I'm sure so many of the committee members must be aware. The prison population is vastly overrepresented by those adults with dyslexia who never learned to read well. Mackenzie's making progress through tutoring, and we're very hopeful that she'll close the gap, but I don't think she's out of the woods. We've done everything we can, but she doesn't read well, and what happens to just about any person like her is that their self-esteem starts to suffer. They do not like going to school. I remember when she would come home in the second grade, her face would be just dreadful and so sad, and we were just crushed. Why didn't you have a good day? What don't you like going to school? Well, we had to go around and read out loud, and she just, you know, thought that she was stupid. She said, "I'm stupid. I can't read." Well, that's unacceptable, and we have the means to address that. And we had a program in place, and it was kind of an arbitrary shutting down of what we were trying to do and what we're still trying to do. That's why we're here, and that's why we'd like for you to support this bill.
Thank you so very much, and thank you for your patience and waiting. Any questions of the panel? Okay, very good explanation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Those are the only people that we had signed up for Senate Bill 1002. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Do you have a question?
I have a comment because I got my question answered. Okay. So while we were sitting here, I sent a quick note down to Legislative Council. It says that after looking at this amendment again, I agree there may be problems with singling out dyslexia. Under the ADA, a school will be required to make a reasonable accommodation for a student with a disability. So in a way to address this would be to put forward a different amendment that would encompass all disabilities so that you're not doing with the band practice and the sports practice and some of those other things that people might be concerned about expansion, but it's clear that there could probably be an issue for under ADA if we limit the type of disability that has access.
Quickly.
Question? So, Madam Chair, can we entertain an amendment based on that information, which it's an opinion.
It's an opinion. We will look into
that. Can we, based on that, look at creating an amendment that talks about students on IEPs or identified special needs students?
We will look into that later. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, with that, I close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1002 and open up a public
hearing. Reopen. Yeah.
And
reopen the 208.
And we're going to reopen a hearing on Senate Bill 2008. Yeah. We can have Dan Hold, John Bullock, and Ossie Rose, please.
Quick, right?
If you want to get going, we good. You've got to be out of here in half an hour.
Okay.
We've got two more bills to go. Okay, you can go ahead and start. Whoever's going to start first.
Chair Doherty and distinguished members of the House Education Committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this afternoon. My name is John Bullock, and I'm the Executive Director of the Redmond Proficiency Academy. We are a public charter school serving about 850 students from throughout Central Oregon, and I'm here today to ask you to reconsider language in Senate Bill 208. While the goal of this bill is to provide charter schools with equitable access to interscholastic activities and athletics, and I'm absolutely in support of providing charter school students with that same access, and I appreciate the support of Representative McLean and Senator Roblin to that effect. As a former high school teacher and a high school coach and a high school principal, I can tell you that these programs are valuable to students. RPA, my school, is fortunate to have a positive and productive relationship with the Redmond School District, our sponsoring district, as well as other neighboring districts. These relationships have allowed RPA students to participate and compete in athletics and activities throughout Central Oregon. Unfortunately, this bill, Senate Bill 208, establishes the potential of charging charter schools a fee of up to 5% for each student to participate in these athletics and activities. While I'm adamantly opposed to the charging of any fee of this nature, it also appears to me that this 5% rate is somewhat arbitrary. For example, in discussions with our sponsoring district, the Redmond School District spends about 1% of its general fund on interscholastic athletic and athletics and activities. Therefore, a 5% fee would seem to be quite inequitable for students at our charter school. I believe it's possible to conduct a study that examines the amount of money each district spends and find a less arbitrary number. Additionally, it's not clear with whom schools would do this negotiation. We negotiate our contract with the Redmond School District. However, we have students from five different school districts who attend our school. And it's not clear how our school would go about conducting those negotiations. Further, we've seen in charter school negotiations, there's not a whole lot of negotiating, as evidenced by the number of schools who receive the minimum amount allowed by law and not much more. In addition, I don't think the establishment of this fee creates equity. Currently, it's my understanding that homeschool students are allowed to participate without incurring any additional fees beyond the pay-to-play fees charged to all participants. Further, our sponsoring district already retains 5% of the state school fund allocated for our school. This amounts to approximately $300,000 per year for students at our school, which would seem to be able to cover the cost of student participation in athletics and activities. We have about 60 or 70 students that participate, and this bill would require us to spend an additional $20,000 to $30,000 per year for our students to participate, which would potentially cause us to consider allowing students to participate in athletics versus allowing them to continue in our award-winning theater and robotics programs. Finally, this bill does not have the full support of the charter school community. Negotiations regarding how this bill and its language might be constructed did not include all stakeholders who might be impacted by such a bill, including parents. The proposed Dash 9 amendment, which would have a sunset date, would allow us the opportunity to evaluate this issue to determine the true cost for student access and to truly have a collaborative process that included all stakeholders. A sunset date of 5 years seems abnormally long in terms of to be able to conduct a study of this nature, while 1 or 2 years might, in fact, be better. I deeply appreciate your time today and would ask you to strongly reconsider the language in Senate Bill 208 that provides equity for our students and to consider the impacts upon public charter schools. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next, Mr. Holt.
Okay. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Ozzie Rose. I'm representing the Oregon School Activity Association. I've been involved in this discussion throughout, and I want to make 5 points with you. One of them I want to make very clear is Senator Roblin's discussion about kids need to have opportunities to participate in interscholastic activities. That needs to happen. Under this bill, schools will be required to offer those opportunities if a child or a student wants to do so. As I indicated earlier, homeschool kids already have that right. This specifies that a charter school can have that kid can. The fee negotiated is up to 5% of the general operating grant. That's $350 for the year for any, once a kid signs up for a sport, that's what it costs to participate in activities related to that. Unless the activity is a activity that requires being enrolled in the course and coming every day, et cetera, band, choir, and some other clubs I think would meet that requirement. Then there's another, the additional up to 5%, so the maximum would be 10. And again, 5% of the general operating fund is $350. It's not a huge fee. The students must reside in the attendance area of the school in which they want to participate. The students must meet all district requirements for participation except attendance, class attendance, because they're going to a different school. Mm-hmm. But everything else, behavior, et cetera, they have to meet the same requirements as the rest of the students in that school district. The student must also meet the academic requirements of the state association that oversees athletics. And that references OSAA's requirements. All kids who participate in high school interscholastics, they have a minimum requirement. Some districts have higher ones. But the minimum requirements, if you are enrolled in four, or there's a minimum enrollment, four classes. If you're enrolled in four, you must be passing three. If you enroll in five, you must be passing four, et cetera. And then the additional requirement is that you must be earning credits each year that will keep you on track to graduate from high school. And that's why that there's a different academic requirement for the homeschool kids. And that last one about the academic requirement for the state association is what Dash 8 is. And I hope that you will support the bill and move Dash 8. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Holm?
Good afternoon, Representative and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Hold, representing Baker Charter Schools and Oregon Digital Leaders Coalition. We've got about 1,300 students all over Oregon and about 90 districts in my charter schools that I oversee. And I am one of the chief drivers behind this legislation. And unfortunately, throughout the course of my running of Baker Charter Schools, not all districts have allowed my students to play. And that is what brought me to building this legislation. In the process of partnering with several different institutions, such as OSAA, COSA, OSBA, we did our best to come up with a consensus solution, as Senator Roblin argued, seemed to be a best fit that we could to provide access while providing reasonable compensation. To clear a couple things, the current amendments would not allow the sponsor of a charter school to charge that sponsor the fee. And so I believe that that's important to maintain the relationship between the sponsor and the charter. As is in most cases, the sponsor is retaining some of the ADM already, and so there's no need for a fee there. So that's an important distinction. As Ozzie said, the Dash 8 amendments for us fixes the eligibility component. The version that came over from the Senate basically took the charter school students and the homeschool students and compressed their eligibility together. And so the Dash 8 amendments is what I'm in support of today. And those would allow the charter school students to fulfill the same eligibility requirements required of the resident students. So I am here supporting the Dash 8. I understand that obviously the fee associated seems like a bit of a leap, but in my situation, I've already had to set aside the money in anticipation of this, and that did make an impact to my budget. But right now I've got at least 7 school districts that are saying no to my students, and so there's no opportunity for what I believe is a key part of their academic life. And so I'm willing to make that sacrifice to provide an opportunity that I can't provide myself as a online charter school. So for me, the Dash 8 is what I'm supporting and hoping that you guys will as well. Quickly on the Dash 9, if the Dash 9 is still on the table, we've worked really hard to get to this point, and I would hate to see 5 years of activity and students being involved only to come back to the table after this is in practice for 5 years to have it sunset. I'd like to have a permanent solution, which goes back to my key goal, was my students were not getting access equally all over Oregon. And I think that we've established that interscholastic sports are important and access is important. And I understand that there's definitely some debate around the fee and where that came from. We did our best to come up with a fee that wouldn't necessarily pay for a whole football program, but in a traditional school setting, as far as the statement of robbing the school funds in every school setting in Oregon, they're taking part of that ADM to support all of the interscholastic activities. And when a student enrolls in a charter school, between the charter school and the sponsor, we retain 100% of the ADM, and the district that is offering the sport or the activity receives no funding from an ADM component. There is the student fee component, and that is totally separate out of this current legislation.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, those were the only people we had signed up for Senate Bill 2008. Any other people want to testify? Okay, with that, we close the public hearing on Senate Bill 2008 and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 263. Representative Gelser? Senator Gelser, sorry.
I don't know. Once in the House family, always in the House family,
that's true.
Right? All right.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Gelstra. I'm the state senator from Corvallis and Philomath, and Albany. Sorry, I went back to my house days. So I'm really happy to sit in front of you with Senate Bill 263. I can talk to you both about the underlying bill and the amendment. The bill addresses an issue that we've really been wrestling with for a number of years, and this is kids who are put on a shortened school day. They're basically told you can only come to school for part of the day. And that goes on not for a week or 2 weeks or a month or 2 months, but sometimes years at a time. And as we've been trying to sort through this over the last several sessions, it's been really difficult to get our hands around it because there's not a clear process by which this happens. And so it's very, very difficult to quantify exactly how many kids this is happening to. We do know it's a large number of kids and why it is occurring. In the Senate, we had a pretty powerful hearing. We heard from one family in particular whose child had to move into foster care because of the situation. It was a 7 or 8 year old who had been limited to an hour a day or 2 hours a day of school, and it just was not possible for the single mother to be able to make that happen, not to mention you cannot get your education in that short of a period of time over that number of years. So we worked, I'm so grateful to the Oregon School Boards Association and the Coalition of Oregon School Administrators and Disability Rights Oregon and others who've worked very carefully on the bill that is now before you. And what we've attempted to do is to just bring it within existing processes. So the first thing is it says you can't be on a shortened school day unless you are on an IEP, because by definition, that is specially designed instruction. The second thing is that every student has the right to access a full school day, that parents will be notified as the IEP team is making a decision about a shortened school day, that the student does kind of have a presumptive right to attend school all day long, and that in that IEP meeting, there is at least one option that is offered that would include a full appropriate supports to attend a full day of school. This does not undermine the process of the IEP team to be able to make decisions that are in the best interest of the student. The amendment is intended to really clarify that we are not talking about kids who are going through chemotherapy or a kid that has mono or anxiety, where the family or the doctor is coming forward and saying, hey, the student needs to be excused from school for a period of time, or a homeschool student that is attending for just a period of time. This is when it is imposed on the student, you are not allowed to come back until. So we worked with legislative counsel and believe that the amendment that you have before you very clearly clarifies that. At this point, I'm not aware of any opposition to the bill, and again, just really want to thank Disability Rights Oregon, Morgan Allen in particular with the Coalition of School Administrations. OSBA was also at the table for these conversations, and it's very exciting to have this bill here after a couple of sessions of trying to figure out how to get at this problem, and I'm grateful to everybody that brought us here. And I'm happy to answer any questions about the bill, the amendment, ice cream, anything you want to talk about.
Okay, any questions of the senator? Okay, you must have explained it fairly well.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much. Okay, next we have Morgan Allen and Bob Judva, please.
Representative Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Bob Junduff. I'm from Disability Rights Oregon, and I'm very happy to be here today to talk to you about Senate Bill 263A. This is a bill that Senator Gelzer has explained very well, and I'm not going to go over the same territory. Just to say that this is an issue that's been on our radar screen for many years. As you know, we provide assistance to families and kids with disabilities in the special education realm. The major issue that we have been seeing over the past years has been children who have been excluded from school, kept at home primarily due to behavioral issues. And what that means is that they're at home, they may receive an hour of tutoring each day as opposed to being in the classroom. This can go on for years, literally. And oftentimes a parent who contacts us because they feel that they're completely out of control. They're out of effective communication with their folks at their school and feel powerless in the process. And so what we're really hoping to do is to make sure that parents are involved, that they are engaged in the process, and that there's some clear standards for when this is an appropriate intervention for a student, to make sure that they're getting the best education they can and that they are able to return to school with a good plan to deal with those behaviors and then to succeed. So that's really what we're after, and I want to thank all mentioned earlier, because I think we've had very productive conversations about this and tried to find a way to put into law some standards that can move us forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For your record, Morgan Allen with COSA. Ditto to Senator Gelster and Bob's comments. We support the -A4 amendment. Has been a good process. And I think certainly there are times when it is appropriate, whether it's an IEP team decision or a student has an illness or other reasons that they may be on a shortened school day. But from our perspective, it's absolutely inappropriate to use a shortened school day or the threat of a shortened school day to coerce behavior or try to do other things with the student. So we believe this bill really makes those lines of demarcation and when it's appropriate and when it's not appropriate clear to all parties, and we support the bill with the A4 amendment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the panel? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, those were the only two we had signed up. Anybody else want to speak on Senate Bill 263? Okay.
Close the public hearing.
If not, I close public hearing on Senate Bill 263A.
And then open the work session.
And we will open up a work session on Senate Bill 263A.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the -4 amendment. A4 amendment.
Okay. Representative Hernandez moves to adopt the -4 amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move Senate Bill 263A as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves Senate Bill 263A as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Excused.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Excuse.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. Is there anyone that would like to carry this on the floor? Okay. Okay, Representative Solman. Thank you very much. With that, I close the work session on Senate Bill 263A and open up a work session on Senate Bill 4. If you want to go through and remind us what it is, please.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Senate Bill 4 was last heard on May 3rd. It allows sixth graders who attend kindergarten through sixth grade to take physical education for 150 minutes each week. It allows grades who attend sixth through eighth grade schools to take physical education for 225 minutes each week. And it allows up to 45 minutes of activities each week to satisfy the time requirement if those activities meet academic content standards for physical education and provided by teachers licensed for physical education. It establishes transition period for the 2019-2020 through 2021-2022 school years, allowing for students to participate in physical education for 80% of the minutes required by current law, and allows the school district to not be penalized for failing to comply with requirements prior to 2022-2023 school year. It phases in the physical education requirements in ORS 329-496 and phases in those requirements as set forth in the summary. There is a revenue impact statement and no revenue impact, and a fiscal impact statement of no fiscal impact, and no amendments on this bill.
Okay.
Chair Doherty, I move Senate Bill 4A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves Senate Bill 4A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Certainly, I'm going to be supporting this bill, and I think I hope this doesn't come off as a little bit of an "I told you so," but this is exactly why I brought the bill I brought. at the beginning of the session because we say you should go do these things. Mm-hmm. And now we have a bill to undo that, which PE's wonderful. Oh, my gosh. I mean, I was the kid that loved dodgeball and am upset that they took the red rubber balls away because I considered it motivation. But in all seriousness, PE is a super important aspect, and the research tells us over and over. But how many good things can the system stand up under? And apparently, it can't stand up under this one. So we have to be exercise more self-control in doing good things. Mm-hmm.
Just excellent statement. Any other comments, Representative Parrish?
Thanks. So this one for me, I will. I've thought long and hard about this. I will support the bill, but with the caveat that if once again this is not implemented, this to me is what the example I brought up earlier in another bill where. School districts say we'll just do the basic minimum that the law requires, and for a decade, school districts didn't come. I've been in this body now. This is my seventh year. This is the first year that I've heard, and I spent 4 years prior to this commit year. Never heard in the 4 years I was on House Ed, we're struggling with the PE requirement. Not one person ever came to me and said, this is coming in a few years, and we're having problems with it. It comes up right at the end when, we got to pay the piper and put PE in. And so to me, I'm a little frustrated that suddenly it's a crisis 10 years after a bill gets passed and no one says anything for the entire time that I served on this committee until this year. And so we may or may not ask school districts to do more or with less or give them more money. But, I'm struggling with the fact that in my community, people care deeply about PE. Ironically, of all the subject matters, we almost had a situation where school board meeting got shut down over taking a day of PE once upon a time out of off the elementary school calendar. So it is something that my community cares about. I'll give this a yes vote, but if we come back a few years from now and we're still not implementing this, then I think it's time to have a different conversation. You know, I hear local control a lot, but local control only works if people actually, go out and do what's in the law. And I'm frustrated by this vote today.
Yeah, thank you. Any comments? Representative Vile.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just as a follow-up to Representative Parrish's observations, I agree that we have created a system that allows us to kind of pick and choose, and I put the responsibility for that squarely in ODE's lap, and I think that a cultural shift in terms of just how we manage the state-level oversight versus the local-level carry of the policies that we adopt here has to be discussed. I'm also going to support this at this time, but I sure hope that this provides us a catalyst for that discussion.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Representative McLean.
Well, the only thing I want to say today is I just bought a book called Active Hope, and it's talking about active hope in a world of difficult times. And so I want to celebrate the fact that it may have been late. It may have been a conversation that was long overdue, but I want to thank the people who brought this bill to us today. I want to thank everybody who worked in the work group. I want to thank folks that found a way to get something that this legislature felt was important, like PE, back in the schools on a regular basis. And we did find a way to do it in a way that the schools, at least at this point, find doable and they're committing to. So in the theory of active hope, I just want us to end on a good note that I'm voting for this bill, yes, and I'm happy to do it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Cool. And I was going to end on the note that I don't want to be on the opposite team of Representative Springer when she's playing dodgeball.
I wasn't picked last.
No, you were not picked last, that's for sure. Okay, any other comments? Okay, seeing none, Matt, she's could you read skills. The roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Excused.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Bile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Excused.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion carries, and we need a carrier. And since Representative Solomon is the other carrier on, or the sponsor of this bill, I would like to assign Representative Solomon to take this to the floor. Okay, anything else, Representative?
At the risk of offending somebody that was picked last, I was picked last in other areas of life. I was not picked last in dodgeball.
Okay, thank you. So I appreciate
that.
Big
feels good.
I appreciate that. And I have no doubt that you've never been chosen last.
Oh, ever. I have. Okay. Just not in dodgeball.
Okay, and I'm carrying over work sessions on Senate Bills 1002 and Senate Bill 2008 until May 31st, 2017. And with that, we adjourn the House Committee on Education. House Committee on Education. And with that, we adjourn the